You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything. Feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So I don't try.
9:06 on a Wednesday, hump day. My next guest has a vehicle named after him, the Woody. Chris Woodbridge, the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette and the publisher of Leatherneck Magazine, joins us now. Woody, what's up?
Hey, Mac, how do you hear me?
Lima Charlie, man, congratulations. You didn't screw it up.
I did not screw it up. I'm trainable, it turns out.
Whoa, I would not have predicted that. I would have expected, what? Hello, Woody, you there? So, well done.
No, I'm glad it's working a lot clearer than the last time. I had to dive into the 21st century world here.
Well, you know, it bodes well then for the Gazette and et al's move into high technology. Well done.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right, now before we talk about the Gazette, I'd like to talk about current events with you. I want something that's embroiled the Marine Corps. Embroiled the Marine Corps. Uh-oh. Hello, are you still there? Hello?
Hello.
I'm here.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know if that was on your end or mine.
No, that wasn't me. I'm just sitting here.
Okay, I'm not sure what that was, but all this talk of being technologically savvy and then the sound cuts out.
All right, so don't press any buttons, for God's sakes. All right.
I'm not touching anything. No, not Dick.
It might be just a network thing. So, since the last time you talked, Dave Furness lit off a fire in the Marine Corps about discipline that has been extremely interesting to watch. A couple of reasons. One is it of that great of a concern, right? So, or is General Furness overreacting? Two, the other part of the issue that was really interesting was the absolute indignant response that you got from different people saying, how dare he, and whatnot. And so I'm curious, from your perch, you have a pretty good perch, you're in touch with a lot of people. Give me your thoughts on that whole discussion, because everywhere I go where I do my little post-traumatic winning presentation, guess what's being discussed? Discipline. And
yeah,
so it's been
interesting. I can easily see that. That letter from CG 2nd Mar Div that General Furness published, man, did that light up the phone, the social media, the it was really pretty amazing the response as you say and the indignancy of some of it I would concur with, but also an awful lot of support too, which kind of brings me around to your first point about whether it is a concern or whether it was overreacting. I think it clearly is a concern. If the commanding general, and I've known, General Furness and I were lieutenants together. We went to AWS together. We were battalion commanders together. I've known him for a long time, and he's not the kind of leader who overreacts. Number two, he's not the kind of leader who, and you can define this term any way you want, but who micromanages. But he is the kind of leader who's going to set a standard and demand that people maintain that standard. And so if he saw enough, and if enough was brought to his attention, then there was definitely and probably is still a legitimate concern over what I call basic soldiering, the most basic individual and unit discipline. And so that I think what really caught my attention more than anything else, and that is I think truly worthy of comment, was the indignant remarks from a variety of folks, various ranks, about number one, you know, this is Mickey Mouse crap. Why are we even worried about this? Haircuts, area police, condition of individual uniforms, equipment, things like that, the barracks, you know, that's all Mickey Mouse stuff. That's not important to combat performance. And as I personally am here to tell you, and I've talked to a lot of other folks with even more combat experience than I have, is there is a flipping equal sign between those elements of basic soldiering, individual and small unit level discipline in garrison and a unit's ability to fight and their performance in combat.
Did you say flipping equal sign?
I did. A flipping equal sign.
Okay, so just so everybody, let me underscore that, okay? Woody has never said anything close to that on this program. Obviously, you feel strongly about it. Let me tell you, one of the things that shocked me was, and again, I shouldn't be surprised at it from some of the people that write, you know, and they write in national publications, right? And I'm not going to name any names. But, you know, to me, you know, my mother, who used to tell me, you know, be careful what you say, right, and never pass up an opportunity to stuff your foot into your mouth. And to do it in a public way, to me, it's like, well, you know what? Maybe we should take a look at it. Would be, to me, the dominant take on, if a general with that kind of experience says that, he's an infantry guy, maybe we ought to take a look at it. But it wasn't even that, Woody. I mean, that's what, to me, was like, are you kidding me? Like, we're... You know, but you can not be disciplined in the area of your, you know, where you live. You cannot be disciplined in the way you wear the uniform, the way you present yourself, the way you greet others, but you're gonna clean your weapon. It's gonna be pristine. You're gonna know what the fuck you're doing. All the rest of that stuff. That's all gonna be the way it is. And if it wasn't so sad, it would be laughable. But
that's exactly right.
That's what really surprised me. The other thing that surprised me is there wasn't too many other general officers that came out and made comments about it. There hasn't been too many. You know, I had General Van Riper on, who was the king of discipline when we were young officers. And until he told the story about my company 3-7 and said, look, this is where my stuff came from. We couldn't find smoke to throw it. When 46s were coming in to medevac our guys, they'd call yellow smoke because the bad guys were listening in the clear. So they'd approach, they'd call the smoke, you'd throw it. Well, we couldn't find yellow smoke. It was in somebody's pack. And he talks about, you know, trying to save 74 of his Marines and trying to find shackle sheets when guys got wounded, smoke when people got wounded, extra ammunition. And he said it was just a function of being better in war fighting that we standardized this stuff. And that's where my stuff came from. And you heard him talk about it. But I blame the Vietnam guys for some of that too, because they didn't talk about Vietnam. And I think there's a lesson in all of this. And that is, don't shut up about your experiences.
That's a great point. That's how things get forgotten.
Well, I was talking to Tim Lynch and Jeff Kinney. I have them on, and you know them both. And I like them because they're not afraid to have an opinion, and they're not afraid to argue. And so we were talking about, I didn't understand General Van Riper when he was doing that stuff. But instead of blaming myself, which I know I should do, because I'm not a grown-up, I blame him. Those, and institutionally, think about this. The boots we now wear are very similar to the jungle boot. Woody and I, and General Furness, we weren't allowed to wear jungle boots, right? We ran from that, right? The bush cover, which we now wear, and everybody wears, we were not allowed to wear that because we ran from Vietnam. And I would say the bleed over in socially was that those guys were reluctant to talk about Vietnam with anybody other than the guys they were there with. And as a result, I think we there were so many things we could learn from them, but as an institution, we were getting away from Vietnam because of all the painful shit that happened there. I'm curious about your thoughts.
That's actually a really good observation, especially when your comments on the social aspect of it, because that's true. I believe veterans of all wars, all combat veterans, do to a degree have that hesitancy to talk about their experiences, particularly with people who don't share that individual, that unique experience. And so that's how things get forgotten. That's how lessons don't get learned. And it's a challenge for us, socially, it's a challenge in behavior issues, a challenge when it comes to small unit discipline, like we're talking about. And it's a challenge on bigger things, tactics, techniques, procedures, weapon systems. When we so want to isolate and cut off those experiences, then no one else can learn from them, and that's wrong, and that's very, very bad for a military organization that has to continue to learn, that has to continue to grow from those individual and collective experiences, no matter how painful they are. I definitely agree with you. I was part of that. No bush covers, no jungle boots. And at the same time, there was a much higher level of emphasis put on that basic soldiering, individual discipline that we were talking about, because I think to a degree, every time we go through a sustained period of combat, we fall into this, in the field and in the rear, deployed versus in garrison, back in CONUS versus in theater or in country. We fall into this dichotomy or bipolar world where, don't worry about all that stuff once you go forward. And by flipping it around, we shouldn't have to worry about this stuff back here because it doesn't matter when you go forward. And that is wrong thinking, straight up. And I think General Furness absolutely did the right thing in addressing it. The other comment I would make on that is that if I were a regimental commander, battalion commander, company commander, platoon sergeant, squad leader in 2nd Division, I'd be embarrassed that the commanding general is the one who took action about this and had to point it out to me that something was not right. A lot of folks have argued about the way he did it, a letter from the commanding general to everyone in the division. You can argue that point, but I also know that, he largely or partially acted on the advice of a panel, a group of high-performing NCOs that he had pulled together from throughout the division, with he and the division sergeant major to talk about this issue. And that's largely what drove the idea of addressing it from the top down. Which gets to one of the points that you've made a number of times, Mac, about that intermediate level of leadership being concerned about whether they have the support of their seniors and the top cover to take action, corrective action at their level. That may be part of what drove that is you know, these sergeants, corporals, gunnies who know the right thing to do, you know, wanted that carte blanche from the CG, as a tool to roll up and stick in the eye of Marines who are not meeting the standard.
And when you do stick your foot up their ass, they scream, "He's hazing me." I want to ask, about unintended consequences, and I had an interesting conversation the other day along these same lines. And somebody said, you know, Mac, one of the issues is when we went through with, I think it was General Hagee and Sergeant Major Estrada, when we went through that whole, the barracks doesn't belong to us anymore. It's where they live. It's their dormitory living place. We don't. And they said, look, when we did that, when that was no longer a military place, the change didn't have to be forever. I go up back into the barracks. I do what I want up here. My room looks like I want it to look. And the change doesn't have to be forever. So I'm a Marine during working hours. But as soon as I come up here, different set of rules apply. I'm curious about that. And so now I'm curious to do, you know, a couple shows about it in that what was the intent of all that? Why would we turn our back on 230 some odd years of the way we do things? And we all got, you know, ready to go to war, attention to detail by inspecting field day on Friday morning. You know, the gunning was up there Thursday afternoon, evening with the Marines, and it looked this way. And the way we did field day was the way we cleaned weapons. We did it right. We did it by the numbers, and it got inspected. When we backed away from all of that, I mean, here's an anecdotal story from the Commandant. He's in, I won't say where he's at, but he's someplace, and he goes into a Marine's room. And he looks, and he says, "What's that doing in here?" Or he says, "What's that?" And the Marine says, "Oh, so that's a four-wheel drive tire." In the room, right? And the Commandant says, "What's it doing in here?" And the Marine says, "I don't know, sir. It was here when I got here." "How long have you been here?" "I've been here 5 months, sir." So there's been a flipping tire in a room for 5 months, and either nobody's inspected it or fill in the blanks, and it's there. And it's a head-scratcher. So I'm curious, do you remember that? Do you remember the background on, yeah, that's where they live, we don't really belong up there anymore? And I'm curious about all that.
I remember that mindset, but for the life of me, I cannot remember the rationale behind it. And I absolutely didn't agree with it at the time. And this is about the time, I was OIC and battalion commander, and right. And no, that's not how we do things, because the absence of leadership in Marines' living spaces is the root of much evil. Okay. It truly is. And since I was a platoon commander, a lieutenant in the late 80s, I can point to easily a half dozen egregious criminal incidents that all occurred in the barracks, in various barracks, not all one unit, various barracks, various units, egregious incidents that somebody knew about but didn't want to take action because it was in the Marines' living space, or that nobody in a leadership role knew about because they had absented themselves from those Marines' living spaces. And the fact of the matter is, entropy takes over, and life is nasty, brutish, and short when people are not engaged and a relevant part of their Marines' lives all the time, to include in the barracks. Anybody who even in a cavalier way talks about, hey, don't ask a question you don't want the answer to, and don't look at stuff if you don't want to find real problems. No, it's your job to go find them. Or they become a felony level crime, or loss of life, limb, or eyesight. It just seems so plain to me, so clear. I can't figure a rationale for approaching it another way, unless you truly have a very, very, I would call it a very rosy and very progressive view of the nature of human beings and individual Marines in particular, and you know, small groups of the same. If you truly believe that they're going to behave like college students in a dormitory, you might want to scratch your head about that too, because we know what goes on there as well. The fact is, human beings, if left to their own devices, generally behave poorly. So it's something that leadership has to take an interest
in. Well, and you know, and it's that structure. I would tell you that you know, I have four kids. I'm not sure how many you have, but young people need structure. If you give people that don't have much experience in life and don't have great judgment because they don't have enough repetitions, if you give them a lot of leeway, it's going to be a shit show. And we know that. We know that, right? And so, I don't know. It's a bit of a head scratcher. But I had somebody say, you know, I think that combined with the attitude, which General Van Riper said is normal. When you come back, you know, from fighting, the last thing you want to sit through or stand are room inspections and, you know, what we used to call SL3 inspections, right? 782 gear. I mean, it you know, really you do look at it and say, this is chicken shit, man, because we all know what's real, and what's real is going and fighting. That's true. And I would even say this, there are Marines that are subpar Marines in garrison and go forward and are good at fighting because they get their shit together. The thing you cannot do, and this is what kills people, is organizations that are undisciplined can't pull the same rabbit out of the hat. Maybe in ones and twosies you can do that, but most of the guys who even try to do that fail. They suck in garrison. They suck when you go to the field, and they suck when you go forward. But organizations, there is no rabbit coming out of the hat. If you suck in garrison and you suck in the field, when you go forward, more people are going to die. So really, the challenge is organizational discipline. And I recently was having lunch at Camp Pendleton and was talking about this with a sergeant major. And he looked at me and said, you know, there's a lot of staff NCOs who just won't go there with Marines because the juice isn't worth the squeeze anymore. If you're going to get up that shitbird's ass, he's going to the first sergeant, and then you're going to be involved in another one of these things that's going to turn into an investigation, and you don't know where that's going to go now. Because everything's got to be PC, and I used the F word when I yelled at him, and now that's going to be on me. And like, are we there yet? And he looked at me and said, yes, sir, we're there. And I've got 18 years in, right? I ain't having that. Guys with anywhere from upwards of 10 that want to retire, they're not having it either. So juice ain't worth the squeeze. And that's pretty dangerous shit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
All right, let's transition. Let's talk about the June Gazette. What are we talking about?
So, ironically, an awful lot of what we've just been talking about is
awesome.
Is very much the underlying theme in the June edition, and it's overall it's about learning, and as I say in my editorial in June, learning is not a term that we use routinely in the Marine Corps. We talk about training, individual training, collective training, on the job training. We talk about education, you know, PME, but we don't talk about the underlying purpose behind those activities, which is learning. And we also don't talk about what goes on in the white space between the training exercises, between the PME courses, and probably most importantly, like we were talking about earlier, between either routine or operational deployments. All of that is learning, and the Marine Corps has to embrace being a learning organization at a collective level, at a unit level, and as individuals, it sometimes gets labeled lifelong learning. But collectively, it's the idea that our training does not stop when we come out of the field. Education and PME does not stop when we're not in school, per se. And our operational experience has to be shared when we're back in garrison in between deployments, and that's how Marines learn throughout their careers. So this is a little bit of an expansion and a change in direction that Major General Mullen, Bill Mullen, who's the CG of Training and Education Command, is pushing the command towards, and by extension, pushing the Marine Corps towards, getting a more coherent and I use the word holistic view of learning throughout the organization. And you know, as I thought about this, and as I was kind of reviewing some of the material in the June Gazette, you know, I see the applicability in what you do with post-traumatic winning. That's about learning. That's about learning from your own experiences and learning from the experiences of others that are shared with you. I think we're going to see probably within the next year or so a new capstone level, meaning, you know, warfighting level doctrinal publication on learning in the Marine Corps, which is in so many ways the foundation of everything we do when we're not actually fighting. And so that's the overall theme in June's magazine.
You know, Woody, can I say something? You know, you and I and our friends and peers, we love these conversations. But I will tell you, but so do young Marines. They sit there like we wanted to learn from our peer, right? I wanted, in fact, I told a story. When I was second lieutenant, I was with Charlie 1-5, 3rd Platoon, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, the Goon Platoon. So I'm the junior lieutenant in the battalion, and we're at Margarita, where 5th Marines used to be in the old Corps, and our regimental commander was a guy named Marty Brantner, and Navy Cross times two, and he was awarded those two Navy Crosses for actions that were separated by 8 days. Now, he got the shit blown out of one of his legs. So he would PT in his red shorts, and you would see, like, two-thirds of his calf blown away, like, much of his hamstring blown away, and here's Colonel Brantner, right? And I wanted to sit down and do what I do now on All Marine Radio when I do battlefield studies and stuff like that with guys, which is to sit down, you know, and listen to them talk about, you know, how did you do this and how did you do that, and so I could have learned. I'm embarrassed to say that I thought General Van Riper was chicken shit when I was a captain. I didn't understand it. And I wish I would have had these opportunities to learn and have that, to listen to him, because when you hear the audio of him talking about trying to find smoke, encryption sheets, and extra rounds in while rounds are flying through the air and people are dying, you don't need a whole lot more than that as a young professional to say, all right, I got it. I understand this now. I understand why it has to be that way. And so I cannot pile on enough. And then the other thing I will just in terms of post-traumatic winning. All post-traumatic winning is looking at the lessons that our culture has taught me. And because I talk about these things every day. I didn't know these things when I retired. Right? Even though I had some good advice, my gunny first and foremost telling me, you're not going to get over this. And that always helped. That sustained me. Right? But it didn't make me a wise man. What's made me wise about living with trauma and this incredible thing that I get to be a part of when I do it is this. I talked to other Marines about it and I learned and I listened. And I heard them say the same things over and over again. And the more I learned and the more I put it together, I then discovered that if you take our cultural truths, if you combine them with your wisdom and you give them to other people, you will have happen to you what happened to the guys in the Hanoi Hilton. and that is your life will be transformed. Your pain and suffering has meaning, as Viktor Frankl talks about. And so this whole concept of learning, right, whether we talk about discipline or trauma, is so resonant in leading a great life. And that when you're done in the Marine Corps, right, we still have another mission for you. Your job is to share our cultural wisdom relative to trauma with people out there that are hurting so bad and ease their pain and transform their lives and then transform your own. And if you can do that, you can live with any amount of pain. I know that because I meet guys all the time that do it. And they're so excited to hear these concepts, and they literally run out of the place because they've got a whole list of people they want to talk to because they now believe, right, by talking about it and by educating themselves that they can do these things. And so I'm embarrassed that I didn't get what Van Riper was saying. And I believed in discipline too. I was like you, man. Woody and I did not grow up in a Marine Corps that had a commander's intent. Hey, Lieutenant, you do what I fucking tell you to. And what I want you to think, you'll see me with my pants around my ankles, waving my arms over my head, okay? Until that point, you do what you get told to do. Got it? Yes, sir. That's the Marine Corps we grew up in. So I just want to commend you for that approach because it's absolutely spot on. And what General Finesse did was a gift to the Marine Corps, ultimately, because it sparked this discussion all over the place. I just heard one, and I'll let you talk here. I get mildly fired up, though. I just heard a discussion with a regiment, and the XO got up to start the whole PME day. And I was speaking and about an hour later, so I went early so I wouldn't be screwed up. And he starts talking about area of responsibility and police call and discipline and things like that. Now, if you can't police up your area of responsibility, if you don't monitor it in garrison, you're going to do that in combat? Well, is that what you're – it doesn't matter, right? And so all this is a chance to learn. And again, a lot of people defend it saying, "By we've been war fighting and going too fast and ignoring this stuff." You know what? There's probably a bit of truth to that. But your approach, Woody, and that these are opportunities to learn and revisit the things that make us great, the timeless thing that makes it great, I want to commend you for it. You're spot on.
No, it's not entirely my idea, but we bundled a lot of this stuff together in the June edition under that rubric that umbrella of learning, and there's some great content there from folks from all ranks, folks who are instructors professionally within the larger training and education command enterprise. And then Marines in the field as well. So it's a great issue. Two articles in there, from General Mullen himself. One of them, had actually, we previously published it online. But it's called the Train Me Mentality. And it's again talking about some of these same issues and the unintended consequences of some of the, what I'll call the culture of provided training that we developed over 12 to 15 years of heel to toe combat deployments with our pre-deployment training program. Some people refer to that as the baby bird syndrome. All I have to do is get my Marines there and somebody will train me. That's not taking responsibility as a leader for your unit and everything it does and fails to do. And so again, this is another aspect of the very much the same problem, the same type of discussion that we've been having.
But that is, I mean, if you know, you and I have talked about it when we were lieutenants, you know, who got us ready for our MCRAS? That was our test before we went out the door. We did. Our company did. There was nobody coming to rescue you. Right? First platoon's going to teach movement to contact. Second platoon's going to teach, attack on a fortified position. Third platoon's going to teach it. We'll rotate everybody through it. Then we'll do it as a company. See, that's the way we did it. Now, I mean, it's all, a lot of it's outsourced.
That's exactly right. And, again, I fully recall, participating in that. I fully recall coordinating and resourcing it as part of TCOM, but it was all with an effort towards getting the best training possible for our Marines who are going forward. But again, the unintended consequence is this idea that, you know, well, of course you can't train yourself to that standard. You can't provide that kind of high quality training yourself. You're just a, you know, you're just a Marine. You're just a captain, a lieutenant colonel, a staff sergeant. You're not a professional trainer. So, well, look at who some of the professional trainers are. Those are the guys that didn't make sergeant. I generalize, but they're contractors. They're good people, and they're dedicated patriots doing a great job. But they're a commodity, a for-profit commodity. So if you sooner or later run out of those guys or run out of the money, the resources that bring them to you, you're gonna have to train yourself.
Yeah. What now, Lieutenant?
Yeah. There you go. You're gonna have to train yourself, and there's a high price to be paid for discovery learning when you're training a unit for combat. And some of that was the drop. You know, hey, we don't want to have battalion commanders doing discovery learning, reinventing the wheel every time they have to get a unit ready. It's part of your job. And it's part of that culture of learning that as an individual and as a collective organization, we prepare people to do that job.
Interesting. No, and a lot of people will tell you that's an issue. Let me read you a text message. Mac, historical parallel. This kind of war, Korea. Less than 5 years after World War II, forces became a shit show. We are further from OIF than World War II to Korea. You can pull the thread of discipline in barracks to SecNav Dalton/Clinton. We are far overdue for another warfighting renaissance. Any thoughts on that?
So, interestingly, you've got an article in June in under the history bucket called Intellectual Renaissance. It's a history article written by Major Austin Duncan that lays out really kind of the timeline and the facts of our intellectual renaissance from the General Gray era.
I was a part of that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Just so everybody knows. And let me tell you this. This comes from both my sons and another general officer friend of mine. They are astounded by how little Marines read today. They said, yep. Dad, you would absolutely shit yourself if you knew how little Marines read today, as coming from your background. I said, well, I mean, I think the excuse of we've been busy only goes for so long. I mean, we found ways to read, and we were doing a lot of shit back then. And it's an emphasis that, you know, maybe needs to be reemphasized. But interesting.
Well, that is again a huge part of this overall concept of a learning organization and lifelong learning. The most effective and efficient lifelong learning tool is reading. And developing your own, and you can base it on the requirements of the Commandant's Professional Reading Program. But developing your own approach to professional reading is, again, the simplest, easiest, most fundamental way to continue and sustain that learning environment, that learning lifelong learning activity for an individual. And because we're a military hierarchy, you can do that for your unit too. So if Marines aren't reading that much, what are their leaders reading?
Right.
And why aren't their leaders using their authority to make that part of the training schedule? And again, I don't buy the "we're too busy" excuse, because it's just an excuse. We're busy. We're marginally busier now than when you and I were lieutenants. were not as busy as when I was a battalion commander. So, you know, there's time, and there's always time if you make it. And that's, again, back to June, that's the message behind A Warrior's Mind, the first article in the magazine by General Mullen. And I'll tell you what, he walks the walk. I've known General Mullen for some time, and he has one of the most challenging and demanding personal reading programs of any officer I've ever served with. And you can find information about his personal program on our website. You want to know what books he's read, why, you know, what he thought of them, you know, how it's kind of a 1 to 5 star rating by subject. You know, and he uses it, I think, the right way as a leader, which is to lead by example and to challenge your people. Hey, can you keep up with me? This is how many books I read a month. Can you keep up with me? It's like taking a unit on a run or doing, you know, doing a collective PFT, CFT. You know, challenge people to keep up with you is, you know, you'll have some who can do it, some who are better than you, and then some who are going to struggle. And those are the ones you work with. So, I think that has to extend in our culture beyond the physical, to the, let's call it the learning activities.
No, and you know what? And it's really interesting because the discipline subject, right, is near and dear to everybody, right? It affects everybody. And so, but when you go down the process, the road of discovery, learning and listening, it doesn't take long for you to get wise on it, right? To see, you know, what Woody said, right? There's a flip and equal sign between garrison and combat, right? But again, now the beautiful thing is, whether you do audiobooks while you're working out, right? Whether you sit down and read at night, there's so many different ways that you can educate yourself. There's no excuse for it. And we all know the people that want to, that enjoy reading and enjoy learning, they find a way to get it in their day one way or the other. And, I never forget, I asked John Allen, about, we were someplace and we were talking about books and I said, have you read all the books that you have and have you read all those? And he said, yes, with an explanation. He said, Mac, there's books that I've tried to read that I think I should read that are just, they're killing me. And I'm not going to take a month to read a book. He said, so what I do is I do something that I call surveying books. And that is I read the introduction because it's written by the author. I read probably the first and second chapter, and then I read the conclusion. If I absolutely cannot get through it, I don't find it interesting. But I know it has important ideas. He said, so then I have the essence of the book. And I can go back and I can refer to it. Because there's too many compelling things to read out there to waste your time and days, you know, not reading those things. He said, so I'm just going to offer you that to you as a technique. As opposed to trying to slog through something that doesn't really appeal to you. He said, get the essence of the book, and you can always go back and knowing the essence, you can go back and refer to it and read other parts of it when you care to, but read the things that excite you. Don't waste your time on things that don't, and here's a way to get through them. And I thought that was really good advice about, you know, about how to get through them.
Very, very good advice and a very legitimate technique. I would add one piece to it.
Sure.
And that is, take some notes. So when you survey the book, you know, whether you keep it in a notebook or 3x5 cards or on your, you know, smart device or whatever, build yourself sort of a little note library of what the essence of that book is. Because that'll help you later, if you're going to make a judgment about whether to read the rest of it or not. And it helps you to, you know, because many, many people write on the same subject. It'll help you to put other authors' works in perspective. If you've got a little reference to go back to, and frankly, if you're like me, I've got CRS, which stands for can't remember shit. So I need something to, to help with that. Use your paper memory every chance you get.
Well, let me tell you, if most of the books that my friends have, like, and you learn this when somebody loans your book. Hey, can I borrow that book? Yeah. Right? Notes in the margin, right? And, sure. You know, not so much maybe highlighting, some highlighting, but notes in the margin. Hey, this relative to what, you know, Stolfi writes in Bias for Action, you know, and you see these things where these thing where whoever reads it has an active brain and no, absolutely. And again, that's that shows
I'd also throw out, you know, your professional journal, the Gazette, is another great tool. I don't want to say it's the hack, the life hack, but the book reviews that we publish are written by some, you know, and they're, you'll see the same names on reviews over and over again. I've got a stable of habitual reviewers, folks who are very good at it, and those reviews are not the cliff notes, but they are in a lot of ways the essence of that book. So, you know, that can sort of become your prime in the pump for other books that are out there. And if you're ever in the position as a Marine or any other kind of military professional of wondering what I should read next, pick up a couple of back issues of the Gazette, look at those reviews, and you'll find a wide variety, but all well reviewed, to give you an idea of whether that's something you want to take on board or not.
And let me throw in, this is not let's plug the Gazette day, but let me plug the Gazette. When you are reading, and if in particular if you're reading Marine stuff, the Gazette's digital archives are one of the coolest things, in my opinion, about the Gazette. I mean, I'm an Iwo Jima guy, and if you just put Iwo Jima in their digital archives and look at the plethora of things that come up and look, and then start looking at dates, right? This uses pronouns like I and we. It doesn't use they, right? Throughout. This was written by somebody who was there less than a year after the fighting.
That's exactly right.
And
same applies to Leatherneck.
Oh my God. So when you do that and you're able to augment with firsthand resources, it just makes it come alive. It's like the difference between looking at a black and white map and going on Google Earth. It makes your learning vibrant and more meaningful. So I would absolutely, I love doing that, and I love those first person accounts of it. They're absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Are we going to talk about the July issue at all?
We can absolutely. Now, Gazette readers, members of the association, you've got your digital magazine out there right now, and heck, at this time of the month, I think probably 75-80% of the print magazines have hit people's mailboxes. So yeah, we're well off on July. Now the beauty of this is, and you'd almost think that you and I had scripted it this way, but the July edition is leadership focus. And what I think is really pretty cool about this is, you've got about, I'd say, two-thirds of the articles are written by enlisted Marines, from Staff Sergeant through Master Guns and Sergeant Major. This is not boilerplate, hoorah, happy face leadership articles. These articles really point at some cognitive dissonance. You know, the audio doesn't match the video sometimes in our approach to leading. Sometimes it very, very, telling articles on individual behavior, the importance of individual character as a leader when you're trying to get other people to model behavior. You know, how you behave is what they're going to look at. So how you deal with your own mistakes in front of your Marines. you know, how you own up to errors that you make, and building this environment of mutual trust, which is a huge part of leading. And some of the authors say that it's more important now that the current generation of Marines put more emphasis on that mutual trust relationship. I don't know that I necessarily agree that that's a new thing now, but it's critically important.
Let me ask you a question. Did you specifically want all the articles to come from the enlisted side of the Marine Corps?
No, I mean, to be honest with you, that was not intentional. But you know, articles are submitted, every day, and I go through them as the editor. You know, initial cut is publishability or not, and then of the publishable articles that are waiting to get into the magazine, I group them together by subjects and themes. And as I started grouping together these leadership themed articles, it just started to jump out at me that, you know, gunny, master sergeant, master guns, staff sergeant, sergeant major. I don't want to say it was a happy accident, but once I got into my staff, my assistant or senior editors got into the work on this, why would we not do that?
Right.
Because the officer corps clearly does not have a monopoly on leadership in this outfit. So it's, I think very, very valuable to have those perspectives. And I also tell you, the quality of the writing is damn good too.
Let me read you an email. Mac, love when Woody comes on. Listening here about the enlisted leadership articles, does he believe that the whole discipline discussion spawned some of this? Because I can tell you this, in my command, we've talked about it more since the initial articles broke about General Furness. It's on everybody's mind, the poor way in which we conduct ourselves, the forced way which little things happen. I heard you talk a couple months ago about units not being able to step off on time because their EDLs are not wrapped up. He said, and he goes on, that's no joke.
Yeah.
When you're late for stepping off consistently by an hour, because you cannot track your equipment, that's embarrassing. I'm curious, though, did that whole discussion spawn some of these articles? Were they already in the hopper? What does Colonel Woodbridge have to say about that?
I'm tracking, and I think the answer is yes to both. So the majority of these articles predate what I'll call the acute discussion prompted by General Furness's letter and actions down in 2nd MARDIV. But what that points to me is this problem, I think, has been festering for some time. And so that's why I believe there's it's not all negative stuff.
Right.
But that's why I think that our staff NCOs, our enlisted leaders, are taking the time to write on leadership. They are probably closer to aspects of this problem than any of us. And so it's something that they feel strongly enough about that they're putting their fingers on the keyboards and pen to paper to get their ideas out there.
Let me read you another email about learning. Mac, your interview with Aaron O'Donnell led me to read Underdogs. Use the Gazette archives all the time to answer lessons learned RFIs, i.e. rifle squad size from Major Neller, Captain Work, Jim Webb. Awesome resource. So there's a good example of what we were just talking about. And the way, and again, can you imagine what you can, I need to do this, and I'll do it, I'll write myself a note, but put discipline into the Gazette archives, see what you get from how many different year groups you get people writing about it and what you walk away from. So interesting stuff. The Woody, is this whole discussion seems to be good for something that you've discussed. I mean, believe it or not, All Marine Radio is into its fourth year, and you've been good enough to come on throughout many of those years. And you've said that, you know, that the Marine Corps, relative to the Renaissance that we experienced in the early 90s, the late 80s, early 90s, that the Marine Corps had kind of moved away, and that it was one of your tasks that you certainly had a piece in terms of reinvigorating the reading and writing. My sense is that that's happening in the Marine Corps. What is yours?
It is. It's not something you can accept enough. You know, we're good enough, or we can get complacent about. So I'm continuously looking for other accesses of advance. You know, whether that's online, expanding our comments forum, whether that's the blog. You talk about a book club. Well, you know, our Gazette blog is effectively a book club.
Right.
Current book out there that folks are commenting on is Ender's Game. I'm picking some titles that majority, if not all, Marines should have read, and they can jump on there, read reviews from other Marines, and make their own comments. We're going to continue that effort and looking for other ways to encourage folks to, you know, start having the individual discipline to get on the keyboard and start putting your thoughts down in words to share with with the larger Marine community. It's going well, but it can't let the foot off the gas.
Let me ask you a question about comments. To me, one of the most discouraging, disheartening things to do in life is read the comment section of anything. Is there a way to police that and yet keep it active and not make it a full-time duty for somebody? Is a way to police it simply to vet it?
That's what we do. I mean, there's particularly when there's links into social media for commentary, there's a requirement. You've got to hunt the trolls down and try to keep that stuff out of it. And it never ceases to amaze me, the volume of the population of Crazy Town out there. But the other thing that we're doing, and I think you'll appreciate this, I'm retooling the comments forum a little bit, and we're gonna launch this next month. Every Marine has a strong tactical opinion. And every Marine is eager to criticize someone else's solution to a tactical problem. So we're going to use the forum that way a little bit, rather than purely focusing on TDGs and solutions. We're going to put a game and some solutions up there and allow folks to critique and comment on the published solutions. There's a burning desire in every Marine to comment and critique somebody else's work. So I think that's another way to build some participation that way and give folks another outlet to keep their tactical brains a little sharper, but share their thoughts with the larger community.
I've always thought, and I used it as part of the way I used to do critiques or after action reviews when I was an instructor, and then even, you know, when I was throughout my life, whenever, I don't care if I've been forward or wherever I've been. And I got it from that decision-making class that I taught at IOC. And and I stole it from Albert Wiedemeyer out of his book called Wiedemeyer Reports. And he was one of the few Americans. He wrote the victory plan. the victory plan, and he came within what, a division or two of getting it right on the screws.
I want a paper on how to win World War II. Use both sides of the paper if you need to.
Right, and he's a major, for God's sake. So anyway, Wiedemeyer writes the evaluation criteria, at the Kriegs Academy. And they were, I want to say there were four, and I don't know if I can remember all of them, but one is the timely application of principles, right? The rapid use of firepower, and three, the logical combat thinking. And so, to me, what I always used to talk to Marines about was, look, you're going to get to the line of departure based on your order and whatnot, okay? The requirement is not to be perfect there, okay? The requirement is to win. So if you cross the line of departure and all of a sudden you see machine guns crossing in front of you and mortars dropping and defileed, you've walked into a, no matter what you did, you walked into a prepared defense. Now what? Okay, that's where you got to be really good. And I said, so I want to caution you. When we critique people, we're going to critique, does it make sense? Does it make logical combat sense? Now, you may not have assumed the things that he assumed in the absence of 100% great, you know, intelligence. Because there are going to be gaps, and into those gaps, leaders are going to have to make decisions about, do we go down this street, or do we go down this alley? Right? And so, as long as that thinking is logical, we're not going to beat the shit out of them. Okay? And then it's going to be up to execution to define us whether we win or lose. And so, to me, maybe I should write something about that. But
you're spot on.
You know what I mean?
There is no right answer.
Right.
You know, there are logical answers, and some are better, and some are more costly.
And to me, that was a key part of what Wiedemeyer to my Germanophile friends out there. But what he was articulating and what the Germans did is that it needs to flow logically from your estimate of the situation into your task and into your estimate of the situation into the execution paragraphs of your order. And if you'll do that, right? If you'll do that, right, and if you'll be faithful to that, then to me the critique becomes: you said this here, but down here we don't do that. Why? There's a fracture there, and learning how to do that and to coach people. Don't be afraid, right? This is how you do it, and you know what you really got to be good at is the decision making part of it, in getting a tie to a win, getting a loss to a win. Right, and getting a win as efficiently as you can. And so, to me, there's great utility in all that. And
right, you're gonna call the best play based on your read of the field, your read of the opponent, and you've gotta have a unit that's well practiced in that play because you are going to then call audibles.
Okay, so how do you do that? You're limited in print, right? How do you do that? So where does this attempt fit in that spectrum?
This is, I think, one of the things I've struggled with since I got here is exactly what you're hitting on. It's how to increase the interactivity of tactical decision games,
right,
without going completely down the road of designing and buying a purpose-built, you know, multiplayer online game. This is one effort towards that. And really, it's still, my analogy for it is it's still playing chess by mail.
Right.
So, you know, you have to wait till next month. But by leveraging our website, we can make that much more timely, much more immediate feedback. And the effort here is, here's a problem, tactical decision game. Here's two or three solutions that were published. Comment on those solutions, and then people can comment on the comments.
Right.
Not to turn it into an argument, but to offer more ideas and more of a forum for communicating those tactical opinions. Because ultimately, that's all they are. They're opinions. About tactical solutions, because there is no right and wrong answer per se. There are better and worse opinions, but, is it logical as you point out, does it meet that fundamental criteria? And this is a slightly more responsive way to do that. Whether in future we do, in fact, through partnership or otherwise, develop a little bit more of a wargaming type platform, we may be doing that as well here too.
All right, I've taken up too much of your time. Tell everybody where they find your work.
Easy, www.mca-marines.org. And you get on the Marine Corps Association website, click the links for the Gazette. You can get to a lot of free content that way if you're not a member. If you decide that you don't want to be a deadbeat anymore and you want to actually be a member of your professional association, the membership links are there too. And then you get access to everything. I will make one more plug here for July, and this is going to appear online, but 16 July is the Random House announced last month, is the release date for General Mattis's book. The title is Call Sign Chaos, Learning to Lead, by General James N. Mattis, and co-written by Francis J. Bing West. That book is going to drop for sale on 16 July. I was fortunate enough to do an interview with the general and Bing West earlier this month. That interview will be published online on the 16th, and then will appear in the August edition of the magazine. And Mac, I'll tell you, a lot of what you and I were just talking about comes through loud and clear in some of the leadership lessons that General Mattis shares in that book.
No, you know, he called me, and I started that series. I've done two installments of what I call On Discipline, the first with General Van Riper and the second one with General Halick. And General Mattis called me, and he said, hey, look, I've got a lot of stuff going on right now, but I want to do one of those with you. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, I'm just between D.C. and Stanford, so bear with me, Mac. I said, yes, sir. And I've joked about it with people, like your drop the mic moment relative to discipline and discussion of the Marine Corps. When chaos speaks, right, after that, it's like questions, comments, anybody?
Let me share this with you. I'm stealing a little bit of my own thunder.
Bueller?
But this is from that interview. The subject, or the question, was basically about the effect of, information technology leading in the information age, and the importance for articulating commander's intent, et cetera. Part of the general's answer is, can you say clearly what you stand for and what you will absolutely not stand for? Because I find the same unit that cannot maintain low DUI rate, no drug abuse, no sexual assault or harassment, is the same unit that cannot maintain fire discipline in a fight. You either lead a disciplined life or you do not. And in the information age, if you're not constantly talking with your troops, and he goes on, they're going to get their information and their opinions elsewhere. It definitely does not accommodate the strong silent type. So that's just a teaser. There'll be a lot more of that in the interview. Again, online in July and then in print in August. So that's exactly what we've been talking about for the last hours.
That's awesome. Awesome. Woody, first of all, I apologize for not getting to you sooner in June, but I appreciate, as always. And again, I find it extremely exciting, as I know others do, that it seems like this intellectual thing that was so much a part of the Marine Corps while we were young and active and our careers vibrant is returning to the Marine Corps. And it is exciting because when that learning curve is steep and that learning occurs, I think it bodes well for the Marine Corps, in particular, bodes well for our casualty rates. And the Gazette and Leatherneck are a huge part of that. So congratulations, I think, on being a part of this, and good luck in the future, and thanks for doing this.
Thanks much, Matt. Appreciate the time.
You bet. That is Chris Woodbridge here, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired.
A-bombs.
He is... conquering Skype today. So we're very, very, very proud of him today here at All Marine Radio. We've been overdue. Yeah. So, but it's my show, right? What the hell? If I don't want to shut it off, then I don't. And that'll do it on a Wednesday. The Lynch and Kenny event will happen tomorrow, so we'll see. If you have anything you want us to roundtable, shoot me an email. Yankees just went down 3-0 in the first inning. James Paxton, nice job, bro. Walks the first two guys. First pitch to the third hitter, winds up in the left field bleachers. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, fastball right down the chute. Ba-boom! Unbelievable. Yeah, Yankees and Red Sox going to play this weekend in London, England, don't you know? Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. Interesting news relative to recovery of remains in a couple different venues. One is the identification of some of the Marines that were killed in the mid-air collision between the KC-130 and the F-18. That in the news. Another one is a good story, and that is it highlights the efforts of nonprofit organizations that have turned to in the fight to find remains of service members from World War II to Korea to Vietnam. And 30 sets of remains found on the atoll of Tarawa. Now, some of those might be body parts of other people, but you know what? Who cares? Who cares? So it is a sacred obligation, you know, that to return the remains of our fallen who paid the ultimate price with their one and only life, to bring them back to our country so that they may rest in peace forever among their comrades. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about a sad story that paints a disturbing picture about Congressman Duncan Hunter. Now, I know everybody's innocent until proven guilty, but as the mosaic gets painted, pretty disturbing. So, wish him all the best, but it's a little bit disturbing. We'll talk about that. And then, if you're just tuning in, Chris Woodbridge, the editor and publisher of the Gazette, joined us for hour two, talked about the whole discussion of discipline and how it's seen in the Gazette, the, both the June and July issues. So don't touch that dial. Have a great Wednesday. All Marine Radio. Back at it tomorrow. But for right now, over and out.